Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Wild, Wild, What the Facts, the podcast where a few friends talk about the crazy, hilarious, and surprising things in history. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Jared.
Hello.
I thought you were dead.
Yeah. Jared and I think we're both like not talking to each other for a couple weeks. Yeah.
Not for any particular reason.
Yeah. Like, no, we weren't fighting or anything. We just like both knew. Well, he probably knew that I was having a nervous breakdown yet again and was like, she needs time.
I could read the room.
Yeah. And so we haven't recorded for a while.
Apologies, folks, but we are still here.
We're here.
And we're alive. Up on a year.
Yeah, this is going to be our year episode, I think.
No, it's not. We started in January.
No, we didn't.
Thought we did.
Halloween in December was our first episode, friend.
Oh. Cool. Yeah. Well, we need to do something for that.
Yeah. Well, I guess we're kind of making a tradition that we didn't really realize.
What's that?
This episode is a spooky episode too, so.
Oh, it's Halloween in December
too.
Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah. So, but before that, how are you?
I'm doing well. Just good. Nothing exciting. Just living a almost 35-year-old single dad life.
Oh, your birthday's coming up.
It is.
Couple weeks.
Like more than a couple.
A few.
Yeah.
Before January.
In any case, I'm getting old.
One more
trip around the sun, folks. We did it.
Oh, I was going to say, I thought you were saying like you only had one left. I was like, is something happening?
No, I'm just saying I made it around one more time.
Oh, okay. Not quite. Don't count those almost, chickens yet.
Almost no fail. So.
That's fair.
I would ask you how you've been, but I know.
I have been better. Yeah, I do mostly hate my life most of the time, but it is getting better. Thank you, Lamictal. Yay. Go to a therapist. Get a mental health. Be mentally healthy if you can be.
Definitely.
And if not, get some pills. It'll help. Especially during a pandemic when you work in healthcare. Yay. Anyway, my house is so cold. So I'm not mentally stable, as I just said, so I sometimes will just buy random things, and my most recent, like, splurge for, I don't want to say no reason, because it's pretty great, I bought my cats a, like, tunnel system with tents, so, because they can't go outside anymore, because we live too close to a freeway, that they now can like go through a window and like it's a tunnel with a couple tents and they can go outside and like enjoy their cat life without killing wildlife or playing on a freeway. But now my house is really cold because the little cat door in the wind just like flops all the time.
Your evolution into full-blown cat lady.
It's okay.
It's getting there.
It's fine. I only have two cats. So.
Yeah, but you made a jungle gym discovery zone system for them.
They love it so much, though. I need to post a picture of Bruce just like chilling in the little cat tent. He like every time we let the dogs out, he runs out to like watch them. It's his favorite thing.
Huh.
But we're going to have to take it down when it gets colder because our house is already so cold and it's not that cold outside yet.
I was gonna say, yeah, it hasn't really gotten cold at all.
Yeah, it's gonna be rough, so we're gonna have to take it down.
How I'm dressed, I'm not really.
Yeah,
it's actually quite toasty in here.
He's wearing like a full beanie and sweatshirt looking long sleeve shirt or something, and I am in a Darth Vader onesie, so killing it.
You're the better dressed of the two.
Always. So yeah, we're gonna talk about some kind of spooky things. I think year isn't as spooky as much as terrible, but what else is new?
Hey, so if we would have done the other one today, that's a little more uplifting.
Yeah, mine is a little more uplifting.
It starts
too.
With a little bit of a meh, but it gets to a good part, so
we'll get there. Just wait, folks. We'll have something.
No spoilers, but next time I'm gonna make you feel a little better about yourselves.
For once.
I'm gonna bring you down first, but
yeah.
Bring it back up.
Mine is like a medium. Like, it's not really like a happy story, but it's not really like a sad story. So,
yeah.
Medium. Let's get into it.
In any case, well, yeah.
Let's hear it. All right. We're going to go to India today.
Ooh.
So, there's this lake called the Rupkund Lake, which is a glacier lake in the Uttarakhand state of India. I think that's how you say it. I looked it up, but we'll go. Anyway, and it's in this very desolate area that's super high in the Himalaya Mountains, like at an altitude of over 16,000 feet.
Wow. High.
And it's a 5-day hike from the closest town. And so it's just surrounded by a bunch of glaciers and rocks, and it's this treacherous hike, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to start with a quote from a BBC article. It says, the trail winds along expansive wildflower-laden alpine pastures, locally known as the Bugyals. I did not look that one up, so that's probably not how you say it, that occur only at the height of over 3,300 meters, which is about more than 10,000 feet.
I was like, that's really high.
Yeah, in the Himalayas. Lofty Himalayan peaks soon come into view and dominate the horizon for the next couple of days. The highest point of the trek is at 5,000 meters, which is 16,000 feet, in a knife-edge-like ridge with a 360 view of the high Himalayas and the rugged glacial landscape. Rupkund lies 200 meters below that ridge. So you, like, see this ridge of just, like, rocks, and then you look down, and you're like, oh, there's this lake. So the lake is at... Hold on. So base camp is up there pretty much. The lake is 2,000 feet below that, and the weather is dangerous and it turns super quickly. So sometimes, like one of the articles I read, that the party had to climb the ridge above the lake and just like slide down to the lake because everything was so steep and treacherous. All right. So there's this lake, and it's relatively small. It doesn't get larger than 150 feet in diameter. And it's only about 10 feet deep. And this lake has become like a large tourist attraction. They have a pilgrimage that goes through the trail through there. And the lake is usually frozen and covered in snow. But for like 1 month a year, it thaws a bit and you can see into the lake. Right?
I mean, it's not really a lake.
Yeah. Into the large pond in the mountains. So we're going to go back to 1942 for a minute. Are you looking up the lake?
I'm looking at it. Yeah.
Don't.
I'm just looking
ruining
at pictures.
The story.
I'm just looking at pictures of it. I'm not looking at context. I just want to see what this thing looks like.
So 1942, an Indian forest ranger named Hari Krishan Madhwal was just doing his job, hiking around, probably like surveying the mountain or something. And he stumbles upon this lake. And apparently it was the one warm month of the year because he can see into the lake and he finds hundreds of bones. Like over 800 people worth of bones.
Huh.
Just like in and around this lake. Some of the bones still have flesh attached. Some still have clothing. And they've all just been preserved in the cold. So they're not like full bodies. There are some with flesh, but it's mostly bones. So after probably having a heart attack and freaking out, he makes the 5-day trek home and reports it. And this was during World War II. So they were like, oh, crap. This was probably Japanese soldiers who were trying to like sneak through the mountains and attack us.
Mm-hmm.
Be super sneaky like, and apparently didn't go well.
Right.
But it wasn't really reported publicly until around 1950, which then brought more people in to do research, and they ended up taking some of the bones out to research them more, and they took about 300 bodies total of bones. And they did some research on them, and they realized that it was probably too old to be recent soldiers. And they thought, well, maybe it was like Tibetan tradesmen that just got like caught in the elements or had an epidemic go through of some sort, like people coming through, they caught some disease, everybody dies in this lake. So theories start to grow, get thrown around, and this lake is now called Skeleton Lake. It's what it's referred to naturally. And one of the theories was that a general and his men got lost in the middle of the Himalayas, and then they got caught in bad weather when they were coming back from a battle in Tibet in 1841. There was other theories that like maybe another epidemic came or a bunch of suicide, like it was a suicide pact and everybody decided to kill themselves at the lake, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Another legend said that a king, his pregnant wife and their servants, which was a dance troupe, I guess, went on this pilgrimage, and they were struck by some deity who was like, nah, and like a huge hailstorm came, and they all died from getting hit with hail.
I like that one.
We'll get more into it. But, so they take about 300 of these bodies, they take them back to India and start to study the bones. They also found some spearheads, some leather slippers, wooden artifacts, some rings, and brought all those back too. But it was 1950, so they didn't have DNA. They couldn't, like, super research it. And hold on. But so they, like, kept them on display for a lot of years. And eventually researchers found that, like, a lot of the bones had head wounds that appeared to be round objects that probably killed them en masse. And then they did some carbon dating in around 2003. So they had these bones for over 50 years. And they concluded that they were probably an Indian tribe from the 9th century. They were believed to be on this 12-year Hindu pilgrimage called Nanda Davi Raj Jat Yatra, which is this ancient tradition that like they still do to this day. And Rup Kund is on the way to their final destination. So one of the professors of archaeology that was part of this team said that the pilgrimage theory was super plausible because they didn't find any weapons other than some of the arrowheads, but they didn't find any major weapons on site. There was no cause of death citing like an attack, so they probably weren't soldiers. They also found like musical instruments and old like that kind of stuff. And there was a bunch of stories of pilgrims traveling along this line. And they were like, OK, DNA finds that there's a male and a female in this group. And it kind of just like strengthens this hypothesis of pilgrimaging Indians that were along their way.
Mm-hmm.
They discovered that the skeletons were two main groups. One was a family and then one. The other ones were just relatively short, was all it said.
Okay.
I don't know. But the researchers concluded that their death was due to a fatal blow to the back of their head, but not by wounds, an avalanche, or a landslide. So their marks on their heads and their shoulders were hit by something round, like a cricket ball, because it's England and or India. And the injuries to the other and they didn't have any injuries on the other parts of their body. Of course, they were mostly bones, so you can't really say that. But they thought it's probably hailstones, ice balls fell from the sky, bam. So that kind of furthers that story of the people getting caught in a hailstorm.
Yeah.
Okay. But one of the things that makes this super hard to accurately look at is none of the bones were like a full body together. They couldn't find a single full skeleton. They were all just scattered bones.
And they fully excavated the entire place for...
I guess. They said they got about 300 bodies worth. Who knows if they got the same bodies.
But not a full body out of...
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. And there's like frequent rock slides in this area. Now there's a bunch of tourists that go through. It's like bad weather in general. So who knows how scattered these bones are, who's taken some, that kind of thing.
I wonder if there's animals up there too.
I'm sure, but that is pretty high.
Goats.
Well, goats take bones.
And then there's like snow leopards.
I guess that's fair.
I don't know. I don't know if snow leopards are up there. I know they're somewhere.
I'm sure there's snow leopards in the snow somewhere. Yeah. But like I said, one of the reports said they had not found a single skeleton fully intact. Like
that's that's insane. That's going to keep me up tonight.
Yeah. Oh, it gets worse. So the hailstorm idea was kept in a theory until 2019. Where a new study published in Nature Communications, where an international team of more than 24 archaeologists, geneticists, and other specialists, took the bones, like the DNA from 37 individuals found at this lake.
Mm-hmm.
And they determined that the deceased indeed died over 1,000 years ago, but not at the same time. A few had died much more recently, like early 1800s. They also, the genetic makeup is more typically of Mediterranean than South Asian.
What?
Yeah. So it's even more of a history now. David Reich, a geneticist at Harvard, said it's unbelievable because the type of ancestry we find in about a third of the individuals is just so unusual to this part of the world. So based on populations living today, they fit into three distinct genetic groups. 23, including males and females, had ancestries typical to South Asians. Their remains were deposited at the lake between the 7th and 10th centuries. But not all at the same time. Some skeletons were older than others, obviously, like which suggests that there was different people dying at this lake lifetimes apart. And then about 1,000 years or so later, between the 17th and the 20th century, two more genetic groups suddenly appeared in this lake. One individual of East Asian related ancestry and 14 people of Mediterranean ancestry of the 37 people they looked at. So there's still 500 more to 800 more people in this lake.
What?
Yeah. The individuals they looked at included children, elderly adults, and like middle-aged adults, but none of them were actually families.
This is weird.
Yeah. The chemical signatures from the skeletons indicate that they had significantly different diets. And so that supports the distinct population groups were different and separated. They found no evidence of any bacterial pathogen. And so a disease could not be a cause of death. So, yeah. There's this lake. Literally hundreds of people died from all age groups over thousands of years. Could have been a hailstorm. Maybe. Rock slides? Who knows? Did they go on a hike and freeze to death? Who knows? Could be all of the above. They also have a theory that it could just be like a weird cemetery. But like, that's a hard cemetery. Like it, 5 days. Carrying bodies like that.
Yeah,
would be,
you have to earn it. Like,
yeah,
man.
They also thought that maybe like since there's frequent rock slides, maybe like it carried bodies from other places and it just like congregates there. But that's still like a weird. It's like can you get, like, you have to be pretty high up for a rock slide to take you to a very high up lake.
In the Mediterranean, folk.
So I did read somewhere that the further you get, like, I wish I had the article up right now, but the closer you get to today's age, so as you're carbon dating and doing, like, DNA research, the harder it is to tell directly, like, genetic ancestry of ancient bones, I guess. So the Mediterranean folk might not be completely accurate, but they're also not 100% South Asian or East Asian.
Gotcha.
So, like, did people come from Europe and met, like, just walk around? Like, who knows? Probably not. Maybe. But, like, we still have no idea. And there's literally no cause of death that they can justify or come down to.
That's really odd. I don't like it.
Yeah. And there's, like, when you come into, because the bones are just scattered, the only ones that are, like, super recognizable are skulls. So on the 1 month a year where it's actually warm, you can see into the lake, there's just, like, hundreds of skulls staring back at you. Yeah. And that's my story. I knew, told you it would be really short, but that's... That. So Rup Kund Lake, we could go there, but I'm not hiking for 5 days in the coldest place ever. Like, not doing that.
No, I have zero desire to ever go to the Himalayas. I'm sure it's gorgeous, folks, but no thank you.
I am not that dedicated to hiking.
There are way better places.
I also don't like being cold.
I just don't like life-threatening falls. Or potential for those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that just reminded me of something. We had, like, a newer, this a couple months ago, we had a new person start at work, and she was getting married a couple weeks after, like, she started. And we're like, oh, where are you going on your honeymoon? Like, the first day we had, like, a lunch together to get to know her kind of thing. She's like, oh, we're going to Estes Park and we're going to go hiking. And I had just watched a documentary about a guy who pushed his wife off of a cliff in Estes Park. And I just started giggling. I was like, well, don't go near any cliffs. And one of the OTs just like, gosh, dang it, Lauren. Like, this is why you don't have friends.
You're like, I have at least one.
I have one friend who understands.
Wow. What's up with people getting... looking for jobs right before they go off for honeymoon. Stop doing that.
Well, in her defense, she had applied to the job several months before that. We just hadn't, like, there was some.
I'm sure she had her honeymoon planned prior.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's on her. And you too, person I work with.
Uh-oh. Did that happen recently?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah, he's going to be out the next week.
How so. Dare you get married?
Right? And look for employment.
I mean, I did start at the bar a month before I got married, and then I was off for the entire month.
Well, I mean, it's a bar.
Yeah.
They have plenty of people.
Yeah. Anyway, what's your story?
My story's fun. I like this.
Let's bring us down.
It's not like I feel yours is darker than mine. It is what it is. Like,
okay.
It's nature. And
all right.
It's what happens when you mess with nature. So it actually revolves around the Uganda Railway and its construction by the British in the late 1800s. And there's actually a movie about this if y'all are interested that I will reveal later.
Okay. Like
being coy about these.
Oh.
However, I do feel that the younger American millennials and the Gen Zers probably have no idea about any of it, the movie or the historical fact.
Okay. I'm right in the middle, so let's see.
Y'all ain't cultured, so here we go. Construction of the railway started in the late 1890s with the goal of linking the interior portion of Uganda and Kenya with the Indian Ocean port city of Mombasa in Kenya.
Okay.
So no longer in the hands of the British, obviously. The line is mutually owned, and this is today, by the Kenya Railway Corps. and the Uganda Railways Corps.
Okay.
So this actually originally started with an ox cart road that was built by the British in the late 1890s.
Oxen pulling carts?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's kind of how they were traveling along it before that. And then
pioneers in Africa.
Right. So in July of 1890, Britain was actually included in an anti-slavery measures that came out of the Brussels Conference Act of 1890.
Oh.
And in December, it was proposed that a railway be built from Mombasa to Uganda to disrupt slave traffic from the interior of the country.
Yeah. Well, I was also trying to think of, like, when was King Leopold a thing? Wasn't it around that time?
That was
in the Congo, but.
Yeah, that was Belgium, though, too.
Oh.
Yeah. That wasn't England.
Where's Brussels?
England.
Isn't Brussels in Belgium?
No, I said it was Belgium.
I know, but the thing you're talking about was like the Brussels something.
Oh, Brussels. Yeah, Brussels is in Belgium.
Okay, that's where I got confused. Yeah, because you said something about they're like.
Oh, the Brussels Conference. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, no, this is way after King Leopold, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Yeah, folks, if you're curious about that and you want to know, he pretty much was lopping people's hands off.
He sucked.
When they wouldn't pull rubber out of trees for him in the Congo. And they're still feeling the effects of that. But that's another story for another time.
Yeah, he sucked a lot.
Anyway.
No, he was right around that time.
Was he?
Born in 1835, died 1909.
Oh, maybe this was in, like, response to him.
I don't know, because it would have been right around that time.
Or maybe lopping people's hands off for not pulling rubber out of trees for you in their own land wasn't considered slavery.
Yeah, it's not slavery, because they paid them a little bit.
And they were living on their own land.
Yeah. Okay.
They could have moved.
Yeah, if you don't like it, leave.
Gosh, and this is the last thing I'm going to say about it, but there's a lady, I think, and she was a doctor. And when she first became aware of it, and this was at the time, the story she tells is just heartbreaking. Okay. It's terrible, terrible, terrible. But anyway, maybe we'll do a show on that one.
Yeah, when we want to really feel down and be angry, we can talk about King Leopold.
So before we got off traffic, folks, the British were using this anti-slave measure so they can build themselves a railroad. To quote disrupt slave traffic from the interior of the country.
And were they using slavery to build the railroad?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, they weren't. That would have been not surprising though. So the railway would allow. So this is their justification. The railway would allow the British to quickly get the people and soldiers to the interior of the country if they needed to stop. Oh, okay.
Naturally.
The ox cart road wouldn't be enough.
I mean, you can't really make an ox go super fast.
Well, I mean, and they had their more sophisticated things too that probably could have made the trip. But in any case, a train's way better.
I'm just imagining somebody like trying to ride an ox
all the way with the Lewis gun mounted to it.
Yeah.
So in March of 1898, the project reached the Tsavo River in Kenya. And construction of a railway bridge was underway because you got to get across the river.
Mm-hmm.
Can't go under it.
Go around it. Got to go through it.
Thank you. You're welcome. That. Mm-hmm. So the building site was spread over 8 miles and was home to several thousand workers who were mostly, can you guess it, folks? Indian.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's British.
I know.
It's a British project, yeah. So where are they going to get most of their workers?
Not Native American, but Indians.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Lieutenant Colonel John Henry Patterson was in charge of this operation, and he actually arrived right before the madness started. Though not long after his arrival, men would disappear in the night and their remains would be found in the wilderness. So that's pretty creepy. And that's,
yeah, just
got to feel that's a bad omen.
Found in the wilderness.
Show up. Yeah.
Well, this is Africa. So one step above Australia of random things trying to kill you.
But I mean, in most cases, especially with this many people.
Yeah.
Like most predators would stay away.
That's fair.
So what was actually happening were two maneless male lions were dragging workers from their tents in the middle of the night and then eating them out in the African bush.
Just like snatch and go?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. So these attacks would go on for the next 9 months.
Wow.
I love the names of these lions that they gave them. Like, we'll get there.
I'm trying to think, like, how would you prevent that? Like, you can't go up a tree because lions can climb trees. Okay.
That's, yeah, there's
those
there's
are all not, my ideas.
Not a lot you can do about the situation except leave or build faster. So there's a period of time when the attacks stopped at the construction site, but there was word from a nearby village of similar attacks.
Oh.
So they were like, eh, we'll stop over here and let's go over there for a little bit.
Were they short of antelope in this area? Like,
there are theories, and I'll go through them.
Okay. All right.
So when the attacks returned to the construction site, they actually intensified.
Mm.
And at this time, there was pretty much one attack per day.
Those are some hungry lions.
Yeah. There were attempts, obviously, to deter the attacks with large campfires and thorn fencing to no avail. So they did everything they could.
These are were lions.
They're
shape-shifting people. Like, they're not lions.
These are gangster lions.
Yeah.
I hate the fact that they killed people, but geez.
Shapeshifter. I'm still going with that theory.
Real life nightmare. So in the beginning, when these attacks started, only one lion would enter the inhabited areas while the other would actually hang back behind. So they had sophistication to their attacks.
Were lions. Continue.
Later, they were more bold, where both would go in and both claim the kill.
Ooh. Would they only take one person at a time, though?
Originally, yeah. So okay. One would hang back. One mm-hmm. would go in. He'd pull the person out. They would snack together. And eventually, they're like, hey, this is easy. Let's just both go in.
Okay.
Yeah. So eventually, it was two per night.
Okay.
So colonial officials soon begin to get involved, obviously, because this is probably getting very expensive for them the longer they sit there.
Oh, yeah.
One official, a guy named Mr. Whitehead, was said to have narrowly escaped an attack literally right after arriving in the dark at the rail station.
Oh, dear.
It said he got away with four lacerations down his back, and his assistant, a guy named Abdullah, was not so lucky.
Oh, poor Abdullah.
So he pretty much got out, bam, like, these fools weren't messing around. Like,
wow.
Officials would arrive with reinforcements of about 20 soldiers to hunt the lions. And then our boy, Lieutenant Colonel Patterson, set traps and ambushes all around for the lions. So this guy became really, really, really involved, and it was his duty to get rid of these things.
Okay.
He tried and failed many times, but eventually was able to kill the first lion on December 9th of 1898.
I'm actually kind of sad. No.
He killed a lot of people.
I know, like, but.
And it would kept killing a lot of people.
They worked for it, though.
They did. They did work for it. They earned what they got, but they still killed humans and they needed to go.
Fair enough. Okay.
And they weren't humans that I'm sure were jumping at the chance to be there building a railway for the British Empire.
That's fair.
Per his writing, he hit the first lion with a high caliber round, wounding it in a hind leg. The lion came back and Patterson hit it in the shoulder with a more powerful rifle. This shot would hit the lion's heart. He He found it lying dead the next morning near the platform where he shot it from.
Oh, so just like, oh, I guess he didn't like make sure it was dead. He's just like, yeah, we'll see tomorrow.
I wouldn't have gone after him.
I guess that's fair.
You don't know where his buddy was.
That's true.
So I think he played it. And if he knew he hit it, they could track it fairly easily.
Yeah, that's fair.
So up to 9 shots were fired at the second lion, with 6 hitting it. And then the lion was hit twice from the same rifle 11 days after it was shot at the first time.
Oh, how big were these lions?
I don't think they were huge.
Really? I feel like they had to be massive.
I might go into that. You can go and see them. There's stuff somewhere in the U.S. So the lion was eventually...
Of course they are.
I think they're in Chicago.
Okay.
With Santa Ana's legs up in Illinois, too. The lion was eventually brought down with 2 shots to the chest and 1 in the head.
Ooh.
According to Patterson, it died gnawing on the down tree branch trying to get at him.
Oh.
So, no, this thing went out. Like,
I know. It worked for it. It worked for it.
You're dead. So the bridge was ultimately finished in February of 1899. And... while the total death toll was never confirmed, Patterson claimed that 135 men were killed by the lions.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. And that's not even counting the villages.
That's some serial killer lions. I'm still going with werelions.
I mean, you're going to like their names.
Okay.
But anyway, so Lord Salisbury, Prime Minister of England, said this is the most English name. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So the whole of the works were put to a stop because a pair of man-eating lions appeared in the locality and conceived a most unfortunate taste for our workmen. At the last, the labors were entirely declined to carry on unless they were guarded by iron entrenchments. Of course, it was difficult to work a railway under these conditions, and until we found an enthusiastic sportsman to get rid of these lions, our enterprise was seriously hindered. So, this guy's a savage. So, Patterson kept the lions as rugs for 25 years.
Oh, dear.
They were sold. I just have this view of this dude with his safari hat and his curly mustache roping around.
Monocle.
The dude from Jumanji, pretty much.
Yep.
The old Jumanji, not the rock.
Yeah.
Again, you Gen Zers. They were sold to a field museum, to the Field Museum of Natural Research in Chicago in 1924. As you can imagine, they weren't in the best of shape when they arrived.
It's because they were a rug. The man walked on them for decades.
I'm sure he spitefully walked on them too a few times. But
kicked them in the jaw as he walked past.
He actually had them the museum had the lions reconstructed.
And those are probably the creepiest looking lions.
They're still on display today with their skulls. So it's really unclear why they went after the people, but there are some theories which we will go over.
Okay.
One is that there was a food shortage in the area which drove them to go after humans. And then another claim that partial cremations of human dead in the area, like they would go and scavenge on the remains of the partially cremated dead, and just they're like, hey, this tastes good, let's go get some more.
So it's like the blood theory, like once they taste blood, they can't go back kind of thing.
Yeah. And then the last, which is actually, and I can't remember, I wrote this a while ago, I can't remember if I go too far into this, but this is the most compelling argument, but... this one claimed that the lion's dental health was really, really, really bad, and it made hunting their natural prey really hard. Simply put, humans don't fight back as hard, and we're softer.
Yeah, our bones are softer.
So
probably. I mean, I'm not a scientist, so I don't know.
Well, our muscles are soft. Like, we're just softer all around than anything.
We'd be soft.
African safari. So unless we have a weapon, we're pretty worthless.
Facts.
The museum gave the lions identifications, pretty boring. FMNH23970 for lion number one, and then FMNH23969 for number two.
Yeah. I'll remember that later.
There you go. Googling the Tsavo man-eaters will pull up these results. If you want to learn more about these lions, also, that's probably the best way to do that.
Is that really their name?
Hold on.
Okay. I was going to be so upset.
Hold on.
Okay.
They're widely known as the Tsavo man-eaters. T-S-A-V-O. That's the river that they were trying to bridge. But if you've heard this story, you know what they're referred to as, and the movie is called The Ghost in the Darkness.
Huh. Never heard of it.
Yeah. Val Kilmer is in it.
Really?
Yes. I think late 80s, early 90s.
Okay.
So.
What's it rated?
13, probably.
Oh, okay, never mind.
Let's see. The Ghost and the Dog.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Oh, that was way later than I thought it was. 96.
Okay.
Yeah. And it is rated. You think ratings would be some of the first things that I
Yeah. Well, I would just ask because if it was rated R, I definitely didn't see it because I was awesome. That's why I've never heard of it.
And Michael Douglas is in it as well. I might watch this movie.
Mm-hmm. Mormons don't watch rated R movies. At least they didn't in the 90s. So
Douglas.
That's why I didn't see it. But maybe I'll Hulu it later or something.
Made $20 million at the box office.
Nice.
Well, yeah, that's my fun story of the Tsavo man-eaters.
That's pretty fancy.
Go check it out. And actually, next time I'm up there, I need to remember that. Because yeah. I would like to see them.
We don't have... Well, you have a friend in Chicago, I guess. I was going to say we don't have an inn in Chicago.
But yeah, if you look them up, they just look like a couple hairless or maneless lions, not hairless lions. That'd be creepy. Yeah. That'd be really creepy.
I don't want to look it up because in my head, I just have a version of like really bad taxidermy because they put these things, but I'll look it up.
Well, I mean, it's a museum that did it too. So they obviously wanted to be as. Like, they look really good.
Okay. I'll believe
really
you.
Good.
Like you should. They're not as creepy as I thought they would be.
Yeah. Actually, kind of like big dogs.
And that guy straight up has a monocle. He has that.
Yeah, he looks exactly how I imagine. Yeah, he's... Folks, this is the guy from Jumanji.
Like, yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if they modeled the Jumanji dude off of this guy.
Yeah.
After this guy.
Like whatever you're imagining of like some old school safari hunter man. Yes, you're right. That is exactly what he looks like.
Awesome. I love it.
Yeah, that's great. Well, why don't they have manes?
I don't know. I mean, it could have been a malnutrition thing. It could have been. Mm-hmm. Could be lots of reasons.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Okay.
I mean, I've seen male lions at the zoo with no manes. In Kansas City.
Oh.
So.
Well, I will believe you, I guess. Manes take energy to grow and maintain. Lions in warmer temperatures who don't need the ring of hair to keep warm simply grow smaller ones. While it's relatively rare, some lions in particularly extreme heat don't grow manes at all.
That was probably it.
Yeah.
Exceptionally hot, super hungry. Hot.
Yep.
Didn't want to spend the energy.
Yeah. Well, there you have it, folks. Don't get too hot if you don't want to grow hair.
What?
I don't know.
That's the moral of that story.
Moral
right
of the story. Lions will eat you in your sleep. Congratulations.
I mean, get them a toothbrush or floss.
Yeah, and don't go hiking in the Himalayas.
That's the moral of the story, folks. Mm-hmm. Don't go hiking in the Himalayas, but if you do, make sure your dental hygiene is up to spec.
Yeah.
Or else you will start eating people.
Or the snow leopards will get you.
Or the snow leopards will get you.
That may or may not live in the Himalayas. We're still not sure.
Yeah. And we're going to leave that a mystery.
Yeah, we're not even Googling it. With that said, if you would like to see pictures eventually when we get to it, you can go to our Instagram at wildwildwhattfpodcast. You can go to Twitter and tweet at us or read some tweets at wildwildwhattf. You can email at us at wildwildwhattf@gmail.com. And please subscribe, tell your friends, rate us on Apple Podcasts, all those
rate
things.
Rate us everywhere, really.
Yeah. I know. Yeah, all the things. Do
no
it, please.
Stalls, please.
Actually, I wouldn't even be mad about that.
But yeah, and thanks for sticking with us this past year. We know we've had some ups and downs, but
yeah.
we're gonna keep going into this next crazy year. So
it's been a year. Maybe next time we'll do something fun to celebrate our year anniversary.
Okay.
All right. See you later. See
Doobie doobie doo.